Senator, how are you?
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you all so much for being with us today. This is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is the 15th of June, 2017. I just wanted to indicate that that we have a full docket today. We're going to be looking at three pieces of legislation and then a work session for the budget, all of these relating to the Department of Veterans Affairs. And in deference to one of our colleagues that is here to testify today, I'm going to change the order of business just a little bit, and I'm going to open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2908. And I'll invite Representative Peluso to come forward, who had indicated she'd like to speak to this measure. Before we begin, Ms. Beidle, do you want to give us a quick overview of what we're doing on this particular measure?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, House Bill 2908 establishes a veteran volunteer coordinator position within the Department of Veterans Affairs. The position will be responsible for developing and establishing a statewide veterans volunteer program, including training, recruiting, screening, and coordinating volunteers. The original staff measure summary and fiscal impact are available on OLIS, and the measure previously had hearings in the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. The department has determined that a program analyst 2 position will be required to serve as the veterans volunteer coordinator.
Excellent. Thank Representative,
you.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Co-chairs Johnson and Gomberg, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Carla Peluso, state representative from House District 50, the great city of Gresham. I am here today to ask for your support of House Bill 2908 to establish a volunteer coordinator position in the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I cannot tell you how honored I am to be back in this room where I served on the Veterans Committee in my first term, and am looking forward to trying to get back on that committee here sooner than later. A sea of goodwill for veterans in our communities exists across the state, including the goodwill of many individuals who are enthusiastic about volunteering their time and service for veterans, especially if their volunteer efforts include connecting with veterans on a personal level. One of the greatest challenges for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs is outreach. Connecting with veterans, providing them with important and accurate information, and guiding them to people and organizations that provide benefits, aid, and assistance. For many veterans, the personal connection is very, very important. Volunteers could be a key resource for ODVA's outreach and connection to veterans. House Bill 2908 established the position of Veteran Volunteer Coordinator within the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. This person will launch a program to recruit, train, and deploy a network of volunteers to reach veterans out in their communities. The strength of the program is based on leveraging the time and energy and expertise of an army of volunteers. The volunteers would be a major referral source for our county veteran service officers and would help veterans connect with these experts who can file their claims. The volunteers could be armed with information about local services and activities for veterans, particularly our aging veterans. Initially, the program would focus the volunteers on connecting aging veterans with local skilled nursing and assisted living facilities and organizations that primarily serve seniors, including Meals on Wheels and senior centers. The volunteers could serve as the local connection for ODVA's conservatorship, thank you very much, and representative payee clients. During the 2015 session, I was honored to be involved in establishing Women Vets Coordinator position. I see this bill as the next step in an ongoing process of better connecting with our veterans and helping them access the services available to them. Through this program, ODVA would be able to extend its reach to veterans through a network of volunteers, which is a very low-cost, dynamic, and powerful solution for veterans outreach. I thank you for your time, and I urge your support.
Thank you so much, Representative. Are there any questions for the representative? There are not. Representative, I know, I think we're supposed to be in floor session right now. The scenario keeps changing.
We do not need to be at the floor right now.
All right, so
at 4 o'clock, we do.
All right, if you'd like to stay with us for a few minutes, I have one more person signed up on 2908, and that is Director Smith.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I believe the good representative has stolen all of my thunder. We were sad to see her leave our House Veterans Policy Committee in her first term, introducing that Women Veterans Coordinator bill to further our outreach to that fastest rising demographic. This volunteer coordinator position and veteran volunteer program truly is a 1,000 points of light effort. We will not solve the challenge of connecting our veterans and their families to their benefits solely through our full-time paid positions, whether at county, state, or service organizations, and we look forward to implementing it and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Colleagues, you've heard from the director, sans thunder. Are there any questions?
I'd like to just acknowledge, and I am apologetic that I do not recall the gentleman's name. I'm looking right at him, and the as an example of somebody who testified on the record earlier when we were discussing veterans issues, crawling under bridges in Salem to find people. And I think that that action gives life to the bill that we're talking about. So I thank you, sir. Forgive me for not remembering your name, but thank you.
Jesus Montes.
Thank you, Mr. Montes.
Welcome, man.
Thank you, Senator.
Any other questions? Spidla, do you have a recommendation regarding 2908?
I do, Mr. Chair. The Dash 1 amendment to the bill removes the unspecified general fund appropriation from the bill and establishes $245,509 lottery funds expenditure limitation for the position and services and supplies costs for the volunteer program. LFO recommends adoption of the Dash 1 amendment.
Senator.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would move adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2908.
Are we in work session?
I did open both a hearing and work session, so thank you for checking that, Senator Monroe. Our colleagues, you have heard the motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, House Bill 2908 is recommended to the full committee on Ways and Means.
I think you need a motion to do that.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
I would be honored to move House Bill 2908 as amended to the full committee on Joint Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Well, forgive me for being premature. Is there discussion on that motion? Seeing none, is there objection? All right, as I was saying, the motion has carried, and I believe we need a carrier to full, and Senator Hansel has indicated he would like to do that, and to the Senate floor, Senator?
Sure.
And Representative Peluso, would you honor us by taking this one to the House floor?
It would be my honor.
All right, very good. Any further business on 2908? All right, seeing none, I will close that public hearing and work session. And I will open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 143B. And again, turn to Ms. Beidle.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate Bill 143B requires the Department of Veterans Affairs to develop and implement one or more competitive grant programs to expand and enhance existing veteran programs on college campuses that help veterans successfully transition from military to college life. The department may make grants of up to $100,000 to community colleges and public universities based on criteria that's specified in the bill. And both the department and the advisory committee are directed to report to an interim committee of the legislature on the implementation of maritime grant program no later than August 31st and September 15th of 2018. The original staff measure summary and fiscal impact statement are available on OLIS. The measure previously had hearings in the Senate committee and the House committee of Veterans and Emergency Preparedness, and the department has determined that a program analyst 2 position will be required to serve as the student veterans coordinator and administer the $1 million grant program.
Excellent. I have 5 people that are signed up to testify here. I see Representative Evans here. Were you here on this measure, Representative, or just in general?
Anyone that is at the pleasure of the chair, sir.
Well, if you have any comments, just let us know. We'd be very happy to hear from you. I'm going to invite, again, Director Smith to come forward, and if I could ask Mr. Mills from Oregon State to join him.
Thank
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Cameron Smith with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And this is another great bill to better support our student veterans. We fight as advocates in their corner for their disability compensation, their access to low-income pensions, their access to health care. But a bill like this matches well with the federal VA's significant GI Bill resource of scholarships coming out of your service to go back to community college and university and take those skills and core values that you gained through your service and make sure you launch productively out into the world. Approximately about $145 million of GI Bill spent annually in Oregon through the federal VA. And what we find is similar to women's centers that have been established on campus or support for first-time college folks who are the first to go to their college in their family, a support network through the student veteran centers and coordinators that exist at some level at many of our institutions of the 17 community colleges and seven universities. That support helps make sure they successfully launch out into the world after their service. In 2009 biennium, I believe we had a pilot of campus veteran service officers that were more in the mold of county VSOs and actually being that benefit counselor. What we have found since is a stronger model is actually embedding these folks on the college's staff more in the student life realm so that they can be that hub of the wheel, not necessarily submitting claims, but navigating any of the issues that come up for student veterans on campus and being, again, a strong referral and partner back to the county VSOs. And I, after all the testimony, will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director. Welcome, Mr. Mills.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I'm Jock Mills. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Oregon State University. I'm here on behalf of all seven public universities. We split units up or bills up, and this is a bill I've been working on with Director Smith from the first hearing on February 7th throughout. We've been very supportive of this effort. I wasn't really sure exactly how to sign up here, and the reason is that I agree with everything that Director Smith said. Throughout this process, what we've been telling the legislators is that one-time funds will take care of individual problems, but the issues that we're really trying to deal with and the problems we're trying to solve take people. So when you have a one-time grant fund, while there are provisions in this bill to pay portions of this salary, there's still grants, and so there's still difficulty in maintaining continuity across the spectrum in terms of providing continuous service for veterans. And I just wanted to put that marker down, hoping that as we move forward on this issue, that we get the people in the positions to work on these. In the meantime, students, in many cases, are picking up this through their health fees and other things, that and it does or can create a burden on the students.
Thank you. Yes, Senator.
Thank you. I would hope that this partnership would endure, and that with now the high level of funding that's going to be coming into veteran services, that we collectively work to translate earned experience and military certification into civilian licenses and civilian professional certification. My whole background is in professional aviation. There is no reason that a military combat pilot should not be able to slide seamlessly into civilian aviation. And we put up a lot of artificial barriers. And I would hope that as this program matures and other programs mature, that we would continue to work on those pathways that translate military into civilian.
Other comments or questions? Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Chair, Co-Chair. I was actually on the same channel as a senator and wondering, I chair the Higher Ed Workforce Development Committee and was wondering, do you track the career pathways that veterans typically go into? And do we have any data on that? Or if not, can we start gathering that kind of data? Because I think it'd be really helpful. I'm interested, as the senator is, in how do we utilize those skills and get those folks into our workforce, not only for the benefit of the veterans, but we need them.
Question noted. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have that information from me, obviously, today, and we'll get back to you. Thank you.
Okay. I didn't expect you to have it.
Anything else, colleagues? All right. Senator Monroe.
Yeah, and I've said this before. During my tenure on the board of Mount Hood Community College, we served a lot of veterans and got them involved at Mount Hood. But we found that many of them didn't have the money to upfront the tuition for their first term. And even though the Department of Veterans Affairs would pay them, and the GI Bill or whatever you want to call it, would pay their tuition, they would only pay it after they had completed a term. And so what the community college did at my guidance when I was vice chair was decided that we would upfront the first term of tuition for veterans. And then, of course, after they finished that term, they collected from the feds and then could use that to pay for their second term and so on. And we found that we quadrupled the number of veterans matriculating at Mount Hood Community College by that action.
Excellent. Well, again, thank you, Director.
Thank you.
Mr. Mills, thank you for being here on behalf of the entire university system. I'd like to invite Ms. Colbreth from Portland Community College and Mr. Terrazas. I'm sorry, from Chemeketa Community College, and Ms. Calloway. Welcome to all of you, and we'll take your presentation in any order you'd like to proceed.
Sure. My name is John Terrazas. I'm the Veterans Coordinator for Chemeketa Community College. I came here as support for the Senate Bill 143. As an advocate for the veterans on our campus, one of the things that we are looking to do is be able to reach out to more and more veterans within the community to be able to help them understand and educate of the various benefits that they have available to them, especially the post 9/11 GI Bill, which is majority of the millennial generation coming through the post 9/11. So my presence here is merely to support and demonstrate the need for that, just as already been expressed before, that there is a huge cost and burden to these students who come out, and these students are not the traditional 18-year-olds that come in and still live at home and even have families and are challenged with the financial burdens that deal with this. So we are looking for continued support, being able to get continued access, and more important, a higher level of awareness and education to the benefits available to them, and this is a step in the right direction.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair Gomberg and Co-Chair Johnson. My name is Emma Calloway. I'm the Government Relations Director for Portland Community College, and it's important to us as an entire institution to be here today to support this bill. Specifically because at PCC, our average student is 30 years old, and our average veteran student is 34. And so there are specific needs that our students experience that can truly be served and served better by a grant program as described in this bill. Earlier this session, you heard from a number of our Veteran Center coordinators, as well as two students, Scott Gregg and Dana Morin, submitted a letter, which is on the record, that I encourage you to look at again. With additional services at, you know, even at one campus, because we have four campuses at PCC and seven centers, so when we added just a little bit more of our services, going from a 0.5 staff member to a 0.75, we saw that our student engagement of our veterans tripled. The additional services of continuity, as Jock Mills from Oregon State mentioned, is incredibly important. Another use for these funds could be adding peer-to-peer counseling in addition to our professional staff on campus. That has been proven to be incredibly meaningful for our students. At our Sylvania campus, our Veterans Resource Center serves 30 to 40 students a day, and we truly believe that adding staff or providing a greater continuity of service can help our students who need it most. We agree as well that we fully support this bill, and we would hope that over time we would find continuity of funding, because one-time funding is difficult when you're hiring staff. But for now, we just want to mention that we feel like we've worked hard all session on a number of populations who truly need our support, and that this population in particular deserves to be served with the same dedication, especially since these students have served us. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Gomberg, Senator Johnson, members of the committee. My name is Stephanie Colbreth. I run the Rock Creek, Portland Community College Rock Creek Campus Veterans Resource Center. I see roughly 60 to 80 student veterans a day, and my student population is 660. I will say that has doubled in the past year. From where we stood, that could have something to do with the fact that we have more tech programs. I'm going to get away from the data and the numbers. I think it disassociates us with the people that we are serving behind them. Numbers don't reflect the intrinsic and humanistic effect that a space like this provides for the population that it serves. It's hard to measure the psychological and emotional impact of a space, especially when it comes to veterans. Brené Brown gives a wonderful talk on shame and vulnerability. Those are things that in the veteran population, we carry a lot of shame with us, and the ability to be vulnerable only comes when we are around our peers. Many people don't know my background and how I actually got into this position. Starting with my military career, I spent 8 years in the Marine Corps. At the beginning of my career, I was raped, beaten, and stabbed multiple times. And the men in my unit are the ones who saved me, not a psychologist. And I will say that they are the ones who were there in the middle of the night when I was screaming. And they are gone. Two of them were killed over in Afghanistan. One was killed by a drunk driver. And three of them have committed suicide. And one of them, I held his hand as he died. So you want to talk about survivor's guilt? I have a lot of it. And the only way that you get through that is you find something in the population and you leave it better than you found it. That is how you deal. Whether it's connecting them with their educational benefit, a community resource, or just being the one stable, positive interaction that they have on a regular basis, it serves the same premise. You leave the population better than you found it. Our dean of students, when she started this center, knew what the population needed, and that was just someone to connect with them, not send them from place to place looking for things. So Narce Rodriguez recently left. She is now going to be starting over at Pacific University. We left a bunch of papers out for our students to leave notes for her to say thank you for starting the place that they have now. And one of them had a very resounding message, and all it said was, "Thank you, I don't hate myself anymore." The change behind the statement cannot be measured by providing information about the services provided and what the student accessed within the Veterans Resource Center. I can testify as how the conversations in the center with the other veterans helped facilitate this change. How the people he interacted with met him where he was because they'd been there and they knew what he needed. Veterans Resource Centers provide more than services. They provide a place for connections, friendship, support, personal growth and introspection, and a place for veterans to help each other. I guess what I'm trying to say is that this bill is not just about providing services to student veterans. It's about creating positive change on the ground level with the younger veteran population. You as legislators have an obligation to leave the population that has protected this nation in a better place than you have found it. This bill has the potential to facilitate and promote change through early interaction and intervention. College is where 89% of veterans intend to go when they're done with active duty. So why not start where they're going to start their first step? That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony today, and more importantly, for your service and your ongoing contributions
to Oregonians. Colleagues, any questions for this panel? Representative Meek.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I just want to thank you both for your service and your bravery to share your story and your willingness to really serve our veterans. I have several, you know, friends and family members I know that have served during the war and this current war. And I do know that they come back, you know, they come out of high school going and want to serve and come back wanting to get their life together. It's very difficult. And I want to just applaud you and just encourage you to stay strong because you are making a difference for all of our families and that are coming back and our community in a great way. So thank you, and I'm looking forward to helping support your cause. So.
Anything else, colleagues? Thank you all. Is there anybody else that wanted to speak to us today on 143B? Please. Not on the list, but if you'd like to come forward and introduce yourself.
My name is Terry L. Todd. I'm a Vietnam veteran that was able to take advantage of our educational bill back then. While I was in school, I still had a wife. The average age of a veteran in Vietnam was 19 years old. When we came back, things weren't too good. The American people have a short memory, and so do the legislators. Veterans, after the war is over, continue in cost to our nation, and improvement to our nation also, in many cases. I was able to get college degree with about 400 credit hours in universities and colleges and so on. And I'm the only one in my family that achieved that. Ironically, I went into the trades because I took engineering and became an electrician right here in Oregon. I hold a supervising license for manufacturing plants. I see foreigners coming in, handing our building codes a letter that said they worked in a factory as an electrician in some place in the Soviet bloc, maybe, of Europe. And they were being given licenses. Yet I knew a man that came out of the Navy. He couldn't get a license because they wouldn't accept his hours. The ship has some pretty complicated wiring and equipment to work on. That was a question that bothered me. Many of the veterans have a hard time getting into certain trades like the electrician trade, even the plumbing trade. They really need the work. Some of them are more educated, better workers, and help others. That's about it. I just want you to know that somebody here present today who's a senior vice commander of the VFW has used that education bill to his advantage. Without it, I would have never got to the point I reached today. And thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Yes, Senator.
Thank you very much for powerfully making the point about the trades. I pulled out aviation because that's my background. But the same comment that I made about translating military service into a profession or a trade holds for these other disciplines, and thank you for making that point.
I'm glad that you're aware of it, Senator Johnson, and hope you have a great day.
Thank you again. Is there anybody else that wanted to speak to us on 143? Ms. Beidle.
All right. Mr. Chair, the Dash B5 amendment that's posted online removes the provision that allows the department to allocate up to 10% of the total funds appropriated for the grant program for administering the program and the language appropriating $1.1 million for the Veterans for the fund. We've added language establishing lottery funds expenditure limitation of $1,187,194 for the grants to campuses and the cost to administer the program. LFO recommends adoption of the -B5 amendment.
Senator.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would move adoption of the -B5 amendments to Senate Bill 143B.
Colleagues, you've heard that motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? The amendments are adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I would move Senate Bill 143B as amended to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, once again, you have heard the motion. Is there any conversation, any debate? Yes.
Probably a little late, but I have to comment on Mr. Todd. I thought you were telling my story. I'm also a Vietnam vet in the Navy, went to college, first in my family to go to college. Unfortunately, I could not get into the trades, and so that's where I ended up here. But just saying, we appreciate your service, and we have not forgotten your story.
Thank you, Representative, and certainly don't want to make light of your comment, but the wiring here can be a little complicated, too. Representative Meek.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair. I just want to thank Representative Evans for the work that we did on our committee to draft the amendments that were actually adopted that will be funding these programs. And so I just want to publicly thank him and thank everybody here for helping us with this.
Excellent. Anything else on 143 as amended? Are there any objections? Seeing none, motion is adopted. And who would like to take this to the full committee and to the floor?
Might I recommend one of our veterans on the House side?
I would be delighted to.
All right. Representative Reardon will carry to the House.
I already got one.
Senator Monroe will take it to the full and to the Senate?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Any further business on 143B? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close that hearing and work session. I will open a hearing and work session on 2891A. Ms. Bible. Okay.
Mr. Chair. House Bill 2891A relates to the Department of Veterans Affairs and establishes a grant fund for the purposes that benefit veterans. The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending the -A3 amendment, which changes the name of the fund established, clarifies the role of the Veterans Advisory Committee, and provides lottery funds expenditure limitation for the program. The bill, as amended, creates the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs Veterans Services Grant Fund. The department may make grants from the fund for the benefit of veterans, including expanding outreach and services, promoting mental and physical health care, housing security, employment opportunities, education, and transportation accessibility. The original staff measure summary and fiscal impact are available on OLIS, and the measure previously had a hearing in the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness.
Thank you. I see that the chair of that committee is here, Representative Evans. If you'd like to come up and join us, and if I can invite Director Smith and Mr. Todd once again to come up as well. Good afternoon, Representative.
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair. Actually, both co-chairs, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. Earlier, I submitted a letter that actually spoke to all four bills that are before you today. But I want to cut to the chase and start at the end and then work my way back. I really, truly want to take this opportunity to make sure people understand how much you should be appreciated for the hard work you have done scouring budgets and, in fact, bearing the load, given all the other subcommittees that are out there, finding a way to keep faith with the voters' will. Given the likely $1.4 billion difference in state general funds from what existing service levels were and the anticipated revenues, all that, it could have been a lot easier, would have been a lot easier to simply do what you could and move on. But you haven't done that. You've worked very hard to try to make sure that we get as close as we can to what voters were looking for, and I want you all to know how much I commend the hard work that you did. And as we approach the upcoming end of the session, we'll always be trying to find a little bit more to make sure that things work, but this is the most profound baseline budget for veteran services in Oregon history, period. You made that happen, and I want to convey the committee's great gratitude for doing that. I also want to emphasize for this particular bill, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak to it, that what we're trying to do with this bill really is the third piece of the puzzle. The first piece, the last 10 years, there's been an increase over time due to the good work of Director Willis and the great work of Director Cameron Smith and his team in redefining the relationship between the state level of service and veterans. Long there had been county VSOs in certain parts of the state. Long had there been a great home loan program. But truly over the last 5-6 years, as a result of the way in which we've been fighting this most current war, there had been a level of teamwork and partnership that I really haven't seen anywhere else. In fact, it is the model for many other states. So what we try to do, given the policy requirements, our committee, every vote we took this year was unanimous. And that's saying something out of a committee that's 4 R's and 4 D's. And my point is this. What we try to do is look at what worked in terms of existing veterans policy and support that. Look at what things we had identified over the last 4 to 6 years as things that really could be funded and would be a good return on investment, and bring those forward as bills. And you've already dealt with several of them today. The third piece is this right here, where there are nonprofits around the state, there are organizations and partnerships around the state that maybe are doing something that no one else is and needs just a little bit of starter money to be able to kick it in to try to get sustainability. That's why this piece, this advisory committee grant fund, is in military terms, it's the pathfinder. It goes out ahead of the rest to make sure something works, and if it doesn't work, we don't have to spend a lot of money on it. But if it does work, we can learn lessons and then come back for more deliberation and find a model that works long term. So I just truly want to commend you for moving this forward. We are grateful for the effort that you have done. We are also hopeful that House Bill 2690 and 3174 will be seen before you at some point before the end of this session or perhaps next. But the most important thing I wanted to leave with you today is that your work on this budget and providing this third piece of the strategy really will unlock the potential of not only billions of dollars in federal aid and assistance and support, but really in transforming the lives of military families throughout the state of Oregon. So I want to say thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Director Smith.
Good afternoon again, co-chairs, members of the committee. I'm Cameron Smith, the director of ODVA, and I also want to add my strong support for House Bill 2891. When Oregon voters passed Measure 96 and previously the unanimous and bipartisan referral of House Joint Resolution 202 to put Measure 96 on the ballot, it was never solely geared simply for ODVA's statewide efforts for veterans, four counties, local efforts for veterans. It is those broader partnerships. And we have some specific bills that we've heard today, creating opportunities for funds for student veterans. There'll be other opportunities in the larger budget bill for mental health and housing efforts. This is a flexible pot of funds that could better support those partner organizations at the local level and match that intent of the will of the voters on Measure 96. I want to highlight Chair Evans and thank him. Many of these ideas that are now coming to fruition began in his head as a policy advisor for former Governor Kulongoski, helping establish a military veterans and emergency management perspective at that statewide level in the governor's office. Now with his leadership on the as chair of House Veterans and crossover with Representative Meek on that committee, it has been inspiring to see both on that House and Senate side that unanimous and bipartisan support. And I just appreciate the opportunity to speak in support. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. Mr. Todd, welcome back.
Thank you. If you were to go to 100 Main
Street. Excuse me, I'm very sorry, Mr. Todd. I just need to have you introduce yourself once again for the record.
My name is Terry Todd. I'm Senior Vice Commander for the VFW. Now, if any of you went to 100 Main Street onto the second floor, you'd find the Veterans Administration there. But if you go to the other end of the building, you're going to find office after office. You'll find the VFW office, American Legion, Paralyzed Veterans, and so on. There's a number of organizations that are furnishing help to veterans as service officers. The situation there is the service officer can move no faster than the VA progresses to any case. Perhaps we can service that too, to be a better outcome. Many of our veterans have problems getting their disabilities. That's what the service officers generally do. These guys are really dedicated, and we need to realize that our more recognized veteran associations are very important to our community. And I thank you.
Thank you again. Any questions for this group? Senator?
Not so much a question as a comment. And I'm glad that Representative Evans is here, but also the director. This particular bill represents a new activity for ODVA at an unprecedented level, with the potential of continued investment as the lottery fund matures. We have had a lot of conversation with the professional staff and among the committee about sideboards on this new program, including the need for protocols commensurate with responsible grant making, outcome measures, return on investment, grant tracking, program accountability, matching funds if they're going to be required, scrutiny of the grant seekers, especially as to their legal and corporate organizational status. And I think one of your first tasks is to write those protocols in such a way that any Oregonian can look at money coming out of this initial grant-making activity, with perhaps more to come in the future, and know that there were sound investments. And I have every confidence that that's going to be the case, particularly with Representative Evans' oversight in watching the department as they promulgate rule, but making sure that we have no stumbles. And I am ashamed to say that there are a number of folks out there that are willing to, in the name of veterans, engage in activities that may not have actual benefit for real service people. And I think we're going to have to collectively, the legislature and the department, be vigilant to make sure that as money is being handed to them from this account, that it truly has the desired effect, which is lifting up and serving the men and women of the United States military.
Co-Chair Johnson and Co-Chair Gomberg, I couldn't agree more. In fact, to your point, there are currently laws on the books about stolen valor and people claiming to be something that they're not. I view protecting this trust of the voters as the same as I would upon the stolen valor issues. We have a responsibility to ensure the military families right now that have not always been treated the best by the feds. I, as one of the folks who've been pushing this, am responsible to you and together to make sure that not only are these things transparent, not only are they protecting the money in a way that only goes through legitimate sources for legitimate outcomes, but to a larger extent, my responsibility on all of these things, I think, is to make sure that the children of the guys that I served with, one in particular who didn't come home, that they have every single opportunity that we can get them by stretching this dollar. So with the same fervor I approached my duties while in the military, I will defend this money to make sure that nobody tries to do something with it that would bring a stain upon the state or upon the men and women that serve. So you have my commitment to ensure not only that we will do everything possible to be good stewards, but to be transparent stewards and ward off any potential folks who are thinking that they want to try to profit from that particular purse.
Thank you. That's very comforting.
Any other questions, colleagues? Very good. Thank you all. Ms. Beidle, a recommendation.
Yes. In addition to the things I mentioned earlier, the Dash A3 amendment specifically established...
Excuse me for interrupting. I forgot to ask. Is there anybody else here that wanted to testify on this bill? I am sorry that I interrupted, but I want to make sure I did that.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, The -A3 amendment establishes $555,000 of lottery funds expenditure limitation for grants and costs to administer the program. Specifically, the grant funding will be $550,000, and then there's $5,000 there for other costs. The amendment also adds an emergency clause, since this will become part of the budget that needs to be implemented on July 1st. LFO recommends adoption of the -A3 amendment.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Co-Chair Johnson.
I would move the -3 amendments into House Bill 2891A.
Excellent. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, the recommendation carries.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would move House Bill 2908 as 2891, wrong place in the agenda, as amended to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you for that motion. Again, colleagues, any discussion? Any objection? Motion carries. And Representative, would you like to take this to the House floor? Very Representative much. Evans will take care of that. Senator Johnson.
I'll take it to full in the Senate.
All right. We have a plan. Anything else we need to cover on 2891A? If not, I'll go ahead and close that public hearing and work session. And then, at last, I will open a work session on House Bill 5039. Colleagues, as we've worked our way through the various stages of the budget for the Department of Veterans Affairs, we have done so consistently with a full room. And I suspect with as many people or more listening at home. And I just wanted to say at this point in our proceedings that that we are grateful to all of you that have served, and that you continue to serve our country and your brothers and sisters in arms. With that being said, at this point, what we normally do is move into the procedures of a budget adoption. And we talk about programs, and we talk about full-time equivalent positions, and then we talk about policy option packages, and we talk about dollars here and dollars there, and by the end of that entire process, if the truth be known, sometimes even we are confused. So I'm going to do something a little bit unusual, and that is to step back for a moment and try to provide what I would say is the big picture. And the big picture starts with this, that last November's the voters of Oregon made a commitment in overwhelming numbers to a substantial increase in our support for Oregon veterans, a historic increase in our support for Oregon veterans to the tune of roughly $18 million more. And we came here in January with that obligation to keep faith with the voters of Oregon, as we've heard several times today, but also in the face of what was then a $1.6 billion shortfall. And so when we began our process, particularly in this committee, what we were looking at in what I would term the first draft of the department's budget was a roughly $10 million gap between what we had and what we believed was expected. And that's the point at which Senator Johnson and I went to work in some very difficult ways. And I certainly don't want to suggest that we did that alone, because we worked together with the members of the committee. We worked with the leadership of the House and of the Senate. We certainly worked with the co-chairs of the full Ways and Means Committee. And I don't want to minimize for a moment the support that that we received from our committee staff, Mr. Bender, Ms. Beidel, and the administrators of our other budget sections, because we cannot look at the veterans budget in a vacuum. And when we went looking for money, we went looking for money in every corner, under every cushion, in every ashtray, and in every creative way that we could to close that gap in a meaningful way. And certainly we also worked very closely with the chairs of the policy committees, Senator Boquist in the Senate and Representative Evans in the House. And as we work to close that gap, I've got to say quite candidly, I think that that we were squeezing budgets and taking money from a number of damn fine programs to do it, everything from potholes to the performing arts, which brings us to today. And where we are today is starting with now $18.6 million, which is the original lottery commitment. And what you will hear from Ms. Beidel in a few minutes is that we have then added back $7.5 million in general funds, and on top of that, an expectation I'm going to use that word very deliberately, an expectation that we will commit another $2.5 million in capital construction funds to support the veterans' homes here in Oregon, which would then take us to that target number of $28 million. But that being said, there's actually a little bit more. There's a little bit more in $2.5 million committed to veterans programs in OHA, which I believe in realistic, real dollars, colleagues, takes us not to $28 million, but to $38.1 million. $38.1 million. And again, doing that in the very detailed, difficult work of going through other budgets in this budget and looking for opportunities and tools and making some very painful cuts to satisfy what was termed keeping faith with the voters of Oregon. So that's what we're going to talk about today in a lot more detail, but I wanted to give you that big picture that we got back to the $28 million and actually added another 2.5 on top of it. Senator, I thank you for your hard and detailed work on this with for all of us. Did you want to add anything to that big picture conversation?
I don't. I think you have covered it. I would just summarize by saying the expectation was $28 million general fund and lottery, and we've exceeded that on behalf of the voters and on behalf of the men and women of the United States military, active and retired.
So we'll now return to our regularly scheduled program. And Ms. Vidal, you would like to talk to us about House Bill 5039.
I would. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, 5039 is the budget bill for the Department of Veterans Affairs. On OLIS, you will find the LFO recommendation, which has the memo and the work session report. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends a 2017-19 total funds budget of $509,889,362, 94 positions, and 94 FTE. The recommended budget in this bill alone is a 14.7% increase from the 2015-17 legislatively approved budget. I'll go over some high-level recommendations before we go into the specific work session report. This budget recommendation doubles the current service level funding for county veteran service officers and the national service organizations. It shifts funding of $4.1 million from other funds to lottery funds to stabilize the home loan program. It adds $350,000 in lottery funds to support a veterans crisis and suicide prevention hotline on an ongoing basis. It restores the $103,700 of general fund in current service level budget for the Emergency Financial Assistance Program, which provides one-time grants to veterans who have emergency needs. There is a $1.5 million lottery funds allocation to address veterans' housing and homelessness issues, with instruction to the department to work with the Housing and Community Services Department and report back to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means in February of 2018 with a proposal for strategic investments that will result in long-term housing stability for veterans. And it establishes a reserve balance of $2.3 million in the Veterans Services Fund to allow for fluctuations in revenue projections and provide a working capital balance to accommodate lottery fund expenditure increases during the biennium. So I have a recap, too, which is a little bit out of the ordinary, but I think it'll help put this in perspective. The lottery fund's expenditure limitation of $12.8 million in the budget recommendation is available through the passage of Measure 96. Total lottery funds revenues dedicated to veteran services, the 1.5% net lottery proceeds, is projected to be $18,692,600 for the 2017-19 biennium. Lottery revenues will be allocated to the department for the lottery funds expenditure limitation included in this budget recommendation, as well as the policy bill recommendations that we just went through, and the balance will be retained in the constitutionally dedicated veteran services fund. The recommended budget also includes $8.5 million of general fund, which includes $7.5 million directly for veteran services and an additional $1 million for general fund debt service on outstanding bonds. In addition to the general fund support in this budget recommendation, the department has requested $2.54 million in general fund-supported general obligation bonds to fund capital projects at the veteran homes in the Dalles and Lebanon. Capital requests are deferred to the Capital Construction Subcommittee for final approval, and so they're not included in this budget recommendation, but we expect that those bonds will be approved in the bond bill and the limitation provided in the Capital Construction Bill. All right, so if we move to the work session presentation report, we can start on page 3. In the loan program, Package 101 increases other funds expenditure limitation by $250,000, supported by home loan revenues, to purchase and install an end-to-end home loan system. Last biennium, the department received funding for a short-term compliance solution to the increased federal requirements around home loans, and this will provide them a system where they don't have to input information into two separate systems. Package 102 in the home loan program decreases other funds expenditure limitation by $1,666,406 and six positions. And you'll notice when we get to the Veterans Services Program, there'll be a corresponding increase in lottery funds expenditure limitation and positions in the Veterans Services Program. Historically, home loan program revenues have been used to supplement veteran services costs. However, this practice has led to losses and decrease in the overall net position of the home loan program. And so eliminating this subsidy of veteran services program activities will strengthen and stabilize that home loan program. Package 103 increases other funds expenditure limitation in the home loan program by $1,134,692 in one position. Essentially, we're doing three things in this package. We're adding a position to serve as the quality assurance and compliance coordinator in the home loan program to maintain oversight and compliance with federal and state regulations. We are reclassifying two positions in the home loan program from Loan Specialist 1 to Loan Specialist 2 due to the increased responsibilities of these positions to comply with regulations for loan origination. And we're providing one-time funding of $933,333 to maintain the ODVA State Office Building, including carpet, painting the walls, and updating signage. In the Veterans Services Program, Package 90, as modified, decreases general fund by $2,549,290 and increases lottery funds by the same amount to fund a portion of the department's current service level budget with lottery funds. The package, as proposed, had eliminated the funding for the Emergency Financial Assistance Program, and this is where that is being restored. And finally, that package adds $1 of federal funds expenditure limitation in anticipation of federal grant awards that may be received during biennium. Package 101 increases lottery funds expenditure limitation by $600,000 to replace the department's conservatorship system. This enables court-appointed ODVA conservators and trust officers to deliver conservatorship and representative payee services. The current system is a legacy system. It's outdated. The department has the original retired developer on contract 2 days a week to support it. So this package will provide one-time funding of $400,000 for the development and implementation and $200,000 for ongoing software licensing and maintenance costs. Package 102 in the Veterans Services Program is a long package. It does a lot of things. It, in total, increases lottery funds expenditure limitation by $9,369,032. The first thing it does, it is increases the County Veteran Service Officer Program by $4,354,861 for total CVSO funding during the biennium of $8,709,722. The National Service Organization Program is enhanced by $118,156 for total funding during the biennium of $236,312. This represents a 100% increase over current service level funding for both of those programs. The package adds $390,256 to establish two positions within the department to address the increased workload that's anticipated with that surge of funding to the county veteran service officers, both to address training and certification of veteran service officers and increased claims in the Portland office. $380,548 of lottery funds expenditure limitation is added to establish two positions within the Aging Services Program. A representative payee position is added and an aging veterans outreach specialist position. And finally, this package decreases other funds expenditure limitation by $920,464 and increases lottery funds expenditure limitation by $2,139,011 to shift a portion of the other funds, of positions that have been supported with other funds to lottery funds. And there's also the corresponding increase in lottery funds that we talked about shifting the money from the home loan program in the home loan division.
Mr. Chair, if I could just interject.
Please.
This has been a question that's been asked, and I see a county commissioner sitting in the back of the room. This has been a question that has been asked as we were developing the budget, and that is whether or not this money for the county veteran service officers is in addition to current county resources, and is there a prohibition against the counties withdrawing their general fund support of the CVSOs and using state money instead, and that cannot happen. So this is money in addition to what is happening at the county level right now. It is not a switcheroo on the money, and I think that's important to have on the record. There's statutory prohibition against that being supplanted. Not that I would suggest, Commissioner, that you would indulge in that level of skullduggery.
Thank you, Senator.
All right, moving on. Package 104 in the Veteran Services Program increases lottery funds expenditure limitation by $350,000 to support a veterans crisis and suicide prevention hotline. This is something that has been funded on a one-time basis in previous biennia, and so we're providing permanent funding for that. The package 104, as requested, had included the additional investments in campus veteran programs and veterans housing. But as you know, we just passed Senate Bill 143B, which establishes the grant program, and the funding for that is provided in that bill. And we have carved out $1.5 million for the veterans' homelessness and housing issues. Package 801 is the LFO Analyst Adjustment Package. This package is increasing federal funds expenditure limitation by $499,999, which added with the $1 that we discussed previously, gives them $500,000 in federal funds expenditure limitation in anticipation of their highly rural transportation grant that they're expecting to have notice that they can apply for in July, which would be after we are out of session, and they will ask for retroactive approval during September legislative days, but they wouldn't be able to actually get expenditure limitation until the February session, which would be after the first quarter and delay distribution to the counties. So we're giving them a limitation with the instruction that the Department of Administrative Services unschedule that limitation until they've actually received and had the grant approved.
And may I just interject here, for those of you that have not watched one of these budgets unfold before and you hear that there's a $1 limitation, is all we're doing is providing the pathway for federal money to come into the state of Oregon. It isn't as though we're trying to underfund essential services by only providing a dollar. This is purely a mechanism to allow federal grant money to flow into the state of Oregon.
Right. So moving on to the Oregon Veterans Home Program Division, Package 90 increases other fund expenditure limitation by $14,946,166 funded through the home revenues. And this is to address the Lebanon Veterans Home operating at a higher census and occupancy level sooner than originally anticipated. Package 102 decreases other funds expenditure limitation by $70,714. This is the net impact of essentially two actions. The first is transferring the Aging Services Director to the Veterans Services Program to be funded with lottery funds. And the second is to establish an Aging Veteran Services Assistant Director within the home program. And that, because the next two divisions are really related to capital construction, those decisions will be deferred to the Capital Construction Subcommittee.
Well, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, now aren't you glad I gave you that high-level overview at the beginning? Ms. Beidle, you have a recommendation for us.
LFO recommends that you accept the LFO recommendation included in the work session report.
Thank you. This is actually fairly emotional for us. We have worked exceedingly hard on this budget, and I think we have kept faith. It is with enormous pride that I move the LFO recommendation for House Bill 5039.
Thank you, Senator. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Representative.
I would just like to thank the co-chairs on behalf of all the veterans for the tremendous job you've done, because we know on this committee who carries the weight and does all the hard work. And it's both of you, and I'm so proud to be working with you, and thank you for allowing us to vote on this, not some other really much sadder story, which, so thank you, thank you, thank you. Senator.
Well, I do want to say something for the record. Early in February, those of us that were on the full Ways and Means Committee traveled throughout the state over a period of several weekends for Ways and Means hearings. And I want to commend you veterans and your colleagues from throughout the state, because it didn't matter whether we were in Hermiston, my home area, or Madras, or Ashland, Portland. You came out and shared with us what your feelings and your opinions on the budget. And two things were loud and clear, at least for me. One, that we were to enhance, not supplant, that was heard, and that the only budget we had at the time was the governor's proposed budget, and that just plain didn't meet muster was there. And I want to thank you for doing that, because where we are today is to a large part degree because you took the time and your colleagues and others to come and to share with us, the decision makers or the budget folks. We heard you, and it made a difference. And then I also want to thank my co-chairs here on the committee, Senator Johnson and Representative Gomberg. You've heard, and it was their great leadership that has us where we are today. And I, too, with great pride, look forward to casting my affirmative vote for this budget. Thank you, co-chairs, very much.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Monroe.
You know, I've been in government for 40 years, and I've seen many times when something like this came about, and there was a shortage of money, and they got the shells out with the pea and started just sort of shifting things around so that it looked like we were implementing what the voters had asked us to do, but in reality, we were playing a shell game. Senator Johnson and Representative Gomberg didn't let that happen this time. Your Ways and Means process is working to your benefit. I think we should all be proud of what's been accomplished.
Thank you, Senator. Representative.
Thank you. I would actually had planned on saving my remarks till the final action, but I'm going to jump right in here. 40 years, Senator Monroe, is pretty impressive. This is my first year. And so when I heard this budget and as initially presented, coming off of an election where it was resounding, it was clear from the people through their votes that we needed to take care of the people who put their lives on the line to protect our way of life. And I was extremely disappointed. So I waved my magic freshman wand and wanted to just simply amend the bill and talk to my colleagues. And I have to tell you, this has been a great learning experience. Have the utmost respect for our co-chairs and the work that they've done on this budget, so that I can actually go back and say, this is what the will of the voters, what it is. And that's important because I think we're at the height of credibility in government right now. and without credibility, I really don't want to be here. And I think that's important that we maintain that. I will tell Director Smith, the next part of that, though, is maintaining the will of the voters. And it's clear that they want us to take care of veterans and their families. So you have the heavy lifting, and I know we're behind you, but I appreciate all the work, co-chairs, and the work that you are endeavoring to do now.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, co-chairs. I have to admit also, being elected November 8th, and it was December 1st or 2nd, I don't know which day it exactly was, but I get a text from one of the leaders, adjuncts from the VFW saying, "Mark, did you see the governor's budget?" And I had not and looked into it, and he goes, "Mark, we can't let this happen." And so I was scared to death. What am I going to do? How am I going to help? But being involved and with Representative Evans, co-chairs here, and just the work we were done. I can't be more proud to be able to go home and let our veterans know that we really looked out for them. So thank you.
And we're only at the recommendation stage. thank you very much for those comments, colleagues. The motion before us is to accept the LFO recommendation on House Bill 5039. Is there any other discussion? Are there any objections? Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to say motion carries. Ms. Beidel.
All right, Mr. Chair, the next thing is the department's key performance measures, which are posted on OLIS. We haven't added or deleted any of their existing key performance measures. We have increased some of the targets just for inflationary factors, specifically 2B if you're looking, and number 3. And then we've also started to increase the power of attorneys that are filed with the department. We expect that number will continue to increase with the increased funding to the County Veteran Service Officers and the department as a whole. We didn't adjust 2018 high because we don't expect those results to come in closer until 2019. So Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of the proposed key performance measures and targets.
Senator, is there a motion regarding the key performance
measures? There is. I move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures.
Thank you so much for that motion. Colleagues, any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, that motion carries.
Budget notes are next, and I alluded to this when I did an overview, but we do have one budget note for the department. Specifically, we are requesting the Housing and Community Services Department and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs are directed to work in concert to develop a plan to advise the legislature on strategic investments of Measure 96 lottery dollars for veterans, homelessness, and housing issues that will result in long-term housing stability for veterans. The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and the Housing and Community Services Department will report back to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means in February 2018 with a proposal that includes a key performance measure to quantify progress towards this goal. The report shall include, but need not be limited to, information on best practices and programs in other states that have shown efficacy, the amount and source of resources intended to be utilized for each option presented, other partners or cooperation necessary from state or local entities, the number of veterans that can be assisted with each proposal at the suggested level of support, and necessary changes to statute to implement the plan. And I will warn you, as a subcommittee, you will probably hear this exact same budget note in the Housing and Community Services Department budget when you hear that budget.
Senator.
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendations on budget notes with respect to the budget for ODVA.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Colleagues, you've heard the motion regarding budget notes. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, motion carries.
All right. Legislative Fiscal Office recommends a budget of $8,517,323 general fund, $12,868,322 lottery funds, $100,457,558 other funds, $500,000 federal funds, $387,546,159 other funds non-limited, and 94 positions with 94 FTE, which is reflected in the dash 4 amendment.
Senator, regarding the amendments.
In the dash 4 amendments or the dash 1 amendments?
Dash 4.
It's the dash 4.
Okay. Thank you. I move the dash 4 amendments into House Bill 5039.
Colleagues, you've heard this motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 5039 as amended to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, any further discussion? Representative Nierman.
Thank you. So this is hard. I want to be supportive to veterans, and I am supportive of veterans, and I support Director Smith and the work that he's done, and he's going to get a lot more money, so he's got a lot more work ahead of him, and I feel confident that we couldn't have that funding go to a a better agency and a better director, so I'm confident of that. I know the co-chairs did good work to craft this budget, and it was hard, and I wasn't there to see all the hard work to be done. I know it was hard. It was probably harder than I'm even imagining, so I'm grateful for that. And I think we got 97% of the way there, but at the end of the day, this budget includes a general fund cut, and it was made up with $2.5 million of borrowing there, and so we got close. But I think I just need to be a no on this, just to be fair to the voters, because I think that's not exactly what the voters voted for when they voted Measure 96 in. So I'll be a no on this.
Thank you, Representative. Yes, Senator.
Benefit of the audience, I just want to nuance this slightly. What we are doing is taking bonding money to do capital construction projects, and that bond is held up by the general fund. So these are lottery bonds that are paid for out of the general fund. We are just using debt to do long-term capital construction, but it is supported and backed by the lottery fund. So it's a matter of interpretation. I believe we can say with absolute credibility that this is a $10 million general fund appropriation. Thank you.
Anything else, colleagues?
One last thing while I still have the floor. This would not have happened this way without Senator Devlin, Representative Nathanson, the two co-chairs of Ways and Means. Yep. And although they have already been mentioned, I want to mention again Amanda Beidle and Steve Bender in the Legislative Fiscal Office, who made all of the parts come together in this report that you just heard read. This is a result of extremely competent work on their parts. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. If there are no other comments, I just wanted to add a few words. And I outlined my sense of this at the very beginning of the meeting, and I don't recall another time when we come to a vote and the co-chairs had tears in their eyes. And I might say that's particularly true in this particular committee. And I would say this is a good day and a good vote. Representative Nierman, I appreciate your observations on this. I feel with great confidence that we have indeed kept faith with the voters and brought our part of the budget to the $28 million that was expected, and that we'll actually exceed that by the time the total budget is adopted. So I'll say again, a good day and a day that we can reach back to people that have earned our support and provided it to them with great appreciation. So that being said, colleagues, anything further? I'll ask if there are objections to the final motion to approve the budget. I believe Representative Nierman is a no, so we'll let the record reflect that. And it will be a great pleasure and honor for me to indicate that the measure is passed. And I will be pleased to take this to full and to the House.
And I would be honored to go to the Senate.
Colleagues, anything else? I'm going to close the hearing and work session on House Bill.
Water or something?
I'm going to close the hearing work session on 5039. And is there anything else for the good of the order? I'm sorry, what were you saying, Representative Brewer?
I wanted to applaud for that. Let's applaud.
All right. Well, I won't say anything after that. I'm just accept that we are adjourned.